You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, my guest is Justin Deschamps. Justin is the author and editor of the blog Stillness in the Storm. The Stillness in the Storm show and blog is an ongoing conversation about world events, hidden truths, and empowering information, how our thoughts, emotions, and actions mold our collective reality, a different perspective on mainstream news, practical knowledge, news on health and wellness, alternative history, science, law, with numerous links provided to cross-reference for further research. Justin is also involved with the subject of disclosure and the exposure of the hidden system of control and domination, which is often referred to as the Matrix. In my opinion, it's one of the best blogs available today. So let's welcome him back to the show now. Hi, Justin. How are you?
Good. How you doing, Lance? Good to be back.
Oh, yeah. It's good to have you. I always enjoy talking to you. In fact...
Likewise.
I was looking at your blog today, and there were two really stunning posts that to me, they were stunning. They were paradigm-shifting posts, and the one was about Dan Brown releasing the... Is it the Rittman Library?
Yes, the source material that he used to base all of his research for his writings.
Yes, I've always liked Dan's work, and I wondered where he got it, and I figured he had inside information. Well, now we know that it was the Rittman Library in Amsterdam, is it? I think it's Amsterdam.
Yeah. I believe it's Amsterdam, yes.
And as your article points out, he's donating a large sum of money, I can't remember how much, you probably have that at your fingertips, to digitize and release all of the esoteric, religious, and occult knowledge that's there, which will be quite a treasure trove of information for everybody.
Certainly. This is, I think, an unprecedented event.
Yes, because you know esoteric knowledge. Okay, go ahead. You talk. Sorry.
Sorry, there's a little lag on my end. I thought you were.
I know. It's just Skype.
Yeah. I was just going to mention, as I think you were about to launch into, is that this is fairly unprecedented. I mean, keep in mind, everybody, that this information that Dan Brown used and has been kept in, you know, quiet places throughout the world has been fairly forbidden knowledge for most of our contemporary history, at least for the past 6,000 years. So the fact that these works are kind of being released to the public is no small thing.
Absolutely. It'll be interesting to see what kind of information is coming out, but I'm guessing that it will be mind-blowing at the very least, because his books, of course, are some of that information is probably coming from the library, but I'm thinking that he may get some of his topics from real-life events.
Right.
You know,
I've had the pleasure of reading two of Dan's books, and I'm not necessarily an expert on esoteric topics and subjects, but I could see that there was clearly a great influence in his writings related to these ideas, these concepts of deep primal symbolism and how that relates to history and the epics that we've had weaving throughout history and familial lines and all these things.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, For people who are listening tonight, the Rittman Library has a, it's on Twitter, and it's also on Facebook. And so you can actually type in the Rittman Library, and you can see what it looks like. And there are, I think there are instructions on downloading some preliminary material. And they're incredible paintings and artwork that seems to be kept by the Rittman as well. Some people say that it's the best occult library in the Netherlands. Essential Hermetic knowledge and rare, rare novels and manuscripts and drawings. So it will really be exciting to be able to have access to those things because they've been held so closely by the control system. And I think it's time that we use our minds a little bit more extensively in grasping the things that have been concealed from us for so long.
Certainly. Perhaps some of your audience is familiar with a man named Mark Passio. He was a great influence in my research and understanding. Have you heard of him before?
Oh, yes. I like Mark.
Yes, yeah. But his name bespeaks his passion. He is a very passionate individual, and he has a great comprehension of the occult. And one of the things I really enjoyed about his work, and that's a lot of where kind of my knowledge of the occult comes from, or at least was launched into, was the idea that this knowledge that has been hidden from us, it's hidden for a reason, because this essential knowledge that we have that's kind of been passed down from generation to generation and distilled over time into this kind of corpus of ultimate truth for humanity, I guess you could say, is used against us. So you can imagine an allegory or a simile, sorry, that I like to use as an example is of this, is that if you were playing a game and you didn't know the rules of the game, would you really be able to advance as far as the people who do know the rules? And I think it's pretty obvious that you wouldn't.
Right.
So this knowledge that they have of the occult, I mean, this is kind of like the rules of the game of existence itself. Mm-hmm. And this knowledge has been robbed from us and purged from the exoteric or the externalized body of research and knowledge that's available to the common person, specifically because it can be used against us. So the fact that this is being released is really unprecedented, and in my mind it launches a whole bunch of other questions as why and what is the ultimate purpose of this.
Yes, absolutely. So it's going to be interesting to see how this comes about, and the headline, or one of the headlines in on Facebook at the Rittman Library, is Dan Brown opens the Embassy of the Free Mind in Amsterdam. And they're just basically saying that it's a new international, the embassy is a new international platform that harnesses spirituality, science, art, culture, music, and storytelling to promote and share free thought. Located in the majestic 17th century, and I'm going to mispronounce this probably, we met de Hoofden, house with the heads on Amsterdam, Netherlands, Keizersgracht. The embassy combines a range of functions, knowledge center, international meeting place, study room, cafe, and a living room of Amsterdam. The project is an initiative of the World Heart Foundation, and that bodes so well for all of us, because just knowing that this is being done is a major paradigm shift. It's like a signal that it's time for the new world, or the new earth, or whatever you want to call it, the new age, the shift, to happen. You know,
right.
Freeing the mind and having the materials at our fingertips. Beginning to have the materials that we need to have to comprehend subjects, and it'll take a while. You know, esoteric and occult information is not easy to comprehend, but I studied Gurdjieff and Uspensky during the 70s, and so I was in a school for about 6 years, and it was not easy to comprehend either. But unfortunately, we had a teacher, and he had various exercises and things like that that gave us examples. But it was an interesting experience, and Gurdjieff's teachings are extremely complex, you know, about human consciousness and man as a machine, and he has the ability to complete himself, and it just goes on and on and on. So, it's a fun thing to enjoy. I always enjoy a good esoteric chomp.
Certainly. Yeah, well, I think it's something that we've been robbed from in our age of information. We're swimming with technology and devices that allow us to access all sorts of information, but the quality and the type of information that people tend to access is pretty lo-fi.
Yeah.
And it's very, I was actually just watching a breakdown of the Matrix trilogy by Mark Passio last night, and he mentioned the book Simulacra Simulation. And I haven't actually read this, but in the book, apparently, it describes how, you know, our world is beset by this problem where we're so enamored and inured by the illusions that we have about the world, the maps, if you will, of the world, that we forget to actually look at the world itself.
Right.
And, you know, I think this is a problem for a lot of people, because this deep esoteric knowledge, it's really dealing with such abstract concepts and objective things that most of the population, or it seems like anyway, I could be wrong, but most of the population just doesn't have the mental vocabulary to really even explore these ideas, at least at a deep level. But the good news is now all this stuff is coming out and we can start to pore over this. And the other good news is that there's this consciousness evolution, this awakening that's happening, which is kind of like a second renaissance. We're in these times where all of these ideas are feeding the curiosity of a lot of people. And through the access of the internet, which I would say is kind of a double-edged sword, you have one population, I guess you could say, that's really diving deep into the deep meanings of reality and consciousness and what it means at an abstract level, really going really high in their comprehension. And then there's, you know, folks that are not so deep, we'll say that.
Well, yes, many are conditioned to accept the surface appearance of things, the five-sense version. And I've always found that to be lacking, so I've always gone for the invisible things, you know, the things that you can't see that are behind the curtain. And I've been pretty diligent about that. And I still am today. And I admit that I know very little, in spite of the fact that I, you know, do dig into subjects pretty deeply, but I still have enough knowledge to put even a grain of sand, probably.
And that's a good place to be, as far, I would say, as far as recognizing your own limitations. It's an easy thing to slip into feeling like, you know, you've kind of climbed the mountain when you compare yourself maybe to somebody else, or you feel like you've studied something, you know it, and I would say it's a good place, because when you realize that all of your knowledge is only but a speck of dust in the great cosmic soup of information, then I think it's a very enriching and encouraging experience, because it means that the potential for discovery and enlightenment and enrichment of your life is just endless.
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, you know, they say that with an open mind, you have space for new information. And so people who have tightly held beliefs and concepts and systems of, belief systems that are fixed, don't have an awful lot of room to shift around and see other sides of a story. So that's been something else that I've been able to do, is work on thinking multidimensionally and not in duality. And it's fairly easy, because you can recognize duality. It's either or, black or white, Is it this or that, good or bad, evil or good? And when you see these things, you can set a little alarm clock in your mind to say, well, now, wait a minute. Why is this reporter only offering two options when there's a smorgasbord of options, and Auntie Mame would be furious for having fallen for just two? So,
right.
You know, there's a smorgasbord of choices.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
Yeah, and I think for when you're starting your path of exploration and you're trying to understand the world and consciousness and reality, it's very easy to get overwhelmed by things because, I mean, I study psychology and philosophy quite a bit, especially over the past year or so, because I've been really trying to, you know, expand my, I guess you could say, information sharing vocabulary, because I want to, you know, instead of just slinging jargon, I want to actually reach as many people as I can. So I'm trying to diversify the way I can talk about ideas. And one of the things I kind of rediscovered for myself is that, you know, when you're starting the journey of awakening and you're trying to learn something new, it's going to feel awkward. I mean, you know, rarely do people jump on a bicycle for the first time and just take off down the hill like it's nothing. I mean, you're going to fall down. You're going to make some mistakes. And you're not going to understand things. And then that initial phase of awakening, from a Masonic perspective, when you've risen from the grave and now you're on the floor of duality, the black and white checkered board, it's okay to see things as a black and white because that's all you can work with at first. That's all you have to work with. But then eventually you start to realize, oh, wait a minute, there's actually some more to this than just black and white. There's actually a lot more gray area than I first admitted to myself that I can see.
And then there's a whole range of colors that begins to show up, and then you realize that that basically whatever you can imagine is probably true on some level, and that the truth can be relative to other truths, and it can be true on one level and then not as true on another level. So
right.
You can really fine-tune it quite a bit. But... on your blog, I really like the way that you have, you do such a good job on that blog. I really recommend people check it out and subscribe to it because it's a wealth of information on different subjects, and you also put a lot of links that are not necessarily related. Well, they're related to the subject, but they're not necessarily all from one source. And so you get to look at for yourself at various links to see, okay, is this true? And you encourage people to do their own research and homework, which is really necessary. You know, we trust other people to give us knowledge and information, and that's a mistake for the most part, because the only one that can make that assessment is ourselves. And what's true for one person may not be true for us. So a lot of bad information and disinformation gets spread around just because people accept it at face value.
Right, exactly. I would argue that, you know, if there was one thing that everybody should do in their lives, not only for themselves, but also for, you know, the collective and the shift or making the world a better place or whatever term you want to label it, the one thing that we should all try to do is come to a personal comprehension of what the truth is. How do we discover it? Yes. And how do we know that what we think is true is actually true? If you can do those three things, wow, you are like light years ahead of you know, most people. And not to say that you know, most people are dullards or incompetent, but at the same time, we're living in a world where those things have been robbed from us so much that the average person has no idea why they believe why something is true or not. So, yeah, really important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm lucky because with the radio station here, I've had 11 years of guests, and I get a lot of my knowledge from reading their books. I don't read them as much lately, but there was a time when I was, you know, reading a book a week and on a variety of subjects, near-death experiences and all kinds of interesting things. And so I had an opportunity to just kind of hold that information in a neutral space and just allow it to be. And then when something else came along down the road that added to that information, I could validate some of it, move it into another area, and put it in a less temporary spot. And it's been a lot of fun. I mean, really, my edumacation has come from this show, for the most part, and also digging into the rabbit hole, which is not always so much fun, because it only goes so deep, and you can only go so far.
Right, before you... Yeah, well, that's one thing. I was actually having a discussion over dinner not so long ago about this topic, and, you know, it's very easy to bite off more than you can chew when it comes to information, and, you know, and I know I've had this issue with myself and my own awakening process, and I see this with other people, is that you can reach kind of an information saturation point really quickly.
Yep.
And if you're not giving that yourself the time to think and process and digest everything, then, you know, you're going to get awakening indigestion, so to speak. You're going to have some, you know, some gas when it comes to thinking or emotions or, you know, things like this. So like you just mentioned a moment ago, I think it's really critical for those on this awakening path and in general is develop the ability to sit in that space of uncertainty with an idea, grab information and let it entertain concepts without trying to pigeonhole it into the true or untrue category too quickly.
Yes. Oh, that's really important. In fact, it's said that paradox is a higher, you know, being in a state of confusion and paradox is actually a higher state. And so when we are in a state of confusion and things are paradoxical, kind of in an Alice in Wonderland upside-down world, we actually are in a higher state than we are when we're certain of, you know, what when we get up in the morning and what we're going to eat and where we're going to work and so on and so forth. So uncertainty and paradox are both tools that can be used to access higher states. Paradox.
Yeah, well, if you think about it, from a psychological perspective, and Piaget, who is the developmental psychologist, he developed a lot of his theories based on this concept, which is that we learn through adversity and strife and challenge, which some people might hear and think, well, it kind of sounds like you're saying, Justin, that the only way we can learn and grow is through suffering. And I'm not necessarily saying that, but what I am saying is that when you think the world is a certain way because you have no evidence to the contrary, then you're not in a state of inquisitiveness. You're not in a state of seeking. You're just in a state of contentment. There's no growth necessarily happening. It's kind of a stagnation. Mm-hmm. But when you're in a state of unknown, when you're in an inquisitive or curious state, it's because something has happened to break down what you thought was so true. Like I'll supply an anecdote to kind of solidify that idea, which is that, you know, for many years I believed that the government had our best interest at heart, and the medical institution was, you know, always looking out for us. And well, it took two things for me to realize that this wasn't true, and then that's what started my whole awakening, was the reality that 9/11 was an inside job, and that cures for cancer have been suppressed for decades now.
Oh yes, you know, and that they're just about every war and false flag is also an inside job. They're all done by people that are working for the cabals. And Oli Damagard is one of the people that I have on my show routinely because he's such a thorough researcher on false flags. And he's been doing it for 30 years, and he doesn't come to conclusions, but he does say what he has noticed by being at these events, and he also has recommendations for people who would like to disrupt them, so to speak. So there are ways that we can participate and shed light on these situations when they happen.
Right. Absolutely. And you know, to kind of go back to the esoteric beginnings of our discussion here, I mean, allowing yourself to feel uncertain, to question your own beliefs, and to spark that that curiosity and that detective inside of you is really important, because ultimately your relationship to the universe is one of unending exploration. So to kind of really get deep here, if the universe is an infinite thing, an infinite singularity, mm-hmm. and you are finite, mm-hmm. well, the relationship of the finite to the infinite is basically endlessness. So to mm-hmm. kind of put that into context, I want you to imagine if you were going to count to infinity using M&Ms, and I said, all right, every day I want you to eat 10 M&Ms, and then I want you to see how high you can get to infinity, right? Well, here's the interesting thing. If you ate 10 M&Ms or you ate 1,000 M&Ms, you'd be making the same progress every day.
Wow.
Which is a kind of a strange concept to think about, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's because, well, you know, think about it. If infinity is not a large number, not in the sense that we think it is. Uh-huh. You know, an infinity is something that literally, if you break down the word infinity, it means in, which is the opposite of, or the antithesis, and then finite. So it is the opposite of finiteness. So, and I know that kind of, it's hard to wrap your head around if you've ever thought of these concepts, so I'm kind of going for the big cheese here, but... What I'm suggesting is that if we are finite creatures, and of course we do have a part of us that is connected to the all and is infinite, but our experience is finite. We have a beginning. Mm-hmm. We came into this life at a certain point in time. We didn't know a whole lot when we came in. Our knowledge is expanding and growing as we grow in time and space. But in relation to the universe, there's an endless well of information and knowledge and experience to have. So what mm-hmm. that means is that it's very similar to crawling up or climbing up a mountain. And this is something that Thoth discusses in the Emerald Tablets of Thoth. It's a pretty consistent concept in a lot of Hermeticism, which is that you could think about your existence in spirituality or existence in relation to the universe as climbing a mountain, where every time you make a step forward up the mountain, the summit keeps receding away from you.
Yes, right.
So, good one.
Very good. Well, now there's another article that I would like for you to talk about, and I kind of took over the Dan Brown thing, but
sure.
The other one that I found really fascinating was the one that you wrote a little piece about, and it's called Astrological Alignment Could Herald Major Changes Beginning in January 2018, All Planets in Direct Motion. Can you talk about that article a little bit and tell people what you think and what you found?
Surely. This was an article submitted by... a friend of a reader and a colleague that I work with, Lance Struckel, actually. And the article is written by Wave Rain. Mm-hmm. And what it describes, very, very briefly, it doesn't go into a whole lot of detail, but essentially the premise of the article is that we're entering a period between, I believe it's January and March of this year, where we'll have a confluence of celestial alignments. And these alignments haven't happened in this type of a way since 2008. And this could herald a major change, as the article title indicates. Mm-hmm. And it uses a system called All Planets. Now, let's see, where is it? Let me make sure I get it right here. All Planets in Direct Motion. So what it's suggesting is that instead of having retrograde motion, so for those who don't know, when a planet is in retrograde, the one that, you know, a lot of people hear about is Mercury in retrograde. What it means is that from our perspective, the planet Mercury is moving in the same direction we are from left to right. And then once it reaches its maximum point, it appears as though it's moving backwards. So it appears as though it's going right to left. And it is from our perspective. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's changed its orbital pattern. So what that means usually is that there's a shifting in the way that planetary influence affects us. And for Mercury and retrograde in particular, it's usually a breaking down of well-established patterns and, you know, technology and things like this. So I don't pretend to be an expert on this system. However, the article implies that between January and March of this year, there is going to be a window astrologically for a lot of opportunity to do a whole lot of good things, which in and of itself is pretty interesting. But then when you add into that perspective some of the other things that have been happening, like, for example, you know, whether you love Donald Trump or hate him, that he just came out with an announcement recently that he was going to be having the human trafficking and ending of slavery month of January of next year, which is really, I mean, unprecedented. There has never been a president that has ever openly declared a kind of a war, if you will, on these things, which, if anybody who knows anything about the cabal knows that, I mean, it is their bread and butter.
Oh, human, yeah,
trafficking and pedophilia and slavery. So
absolutely
major changes.
Yeah. And of course, many people that are in politics are blackmailed by their cohorts, their peers and their superiors. And that blackmail is held against them, you know, until the day they drop dead, which is not, you know, it's not likely, but if they ever change their mind, they may just drop dead, you know, go against
right.
the controllers, and you don't, bear too well.
Right. Exactly.
This is an interesting time, because not only are many people agreeing that it is part of the end time period, you know, the end of an age and the beginning of something else, a new beginning, and many believe there's a new earth, and you know, they're kind of stuck on 5D, but I never have really felt that 5D was a major jump, but especially when there's an infinite number of dimensions and parallel universes. But if 5D, people want to go to 5D, that's great. I mean, at least it's a step. But the matrix itself is supposed to be nine-dimensional. So until you get out of the ninth dimension and you know, beyond the 12th, then you hit the 13th, which is well hidden, because if you'll notice, buildings don't have 13 floors. High-rise buildings often have skip the 13th floor, and Friday the 13th is considered unlucky. So there's all kinds of taboos about 13, and we're kind of kept away. And there's a 13th planet, I think it's Asclepius, and it affects astrology, but people don't factor it in because it's not well known. Mahala Gale does,
right.
And she's been talking about it for years, but I suspect that the number 13 is a very significant number, and is something that we'll be seeing more of, since it's kind of coming out. And it may be that beyond the 13th level, we're out of the matrix. I don't know. We're not out of it yet.
Right.
So, and boy, would it be nice to be out of it, wouldn't it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot of indications that big things are changing. And I mean, ultimately, I like to remind myself of the fact that I don't necessarily know for certain what the end game is going to be. But I think it's pretty clear at this point, at least in my estimation, that the writing is on the wall, and things are changing and progress is being made. And what I like to kind of emphasize in my work is that we're not passengers, we're co-creators.
Right.
We're here to kind of do this work together with the universe, not just let it happen to us.
Yes, absolutely. That's really important. Because so many people feel disempowered and a little helpless and insecure about their role in life, and many don't even know what they want to do when they grow up. But it really isn't all that complicated. You know, our thoughts create reality, and we can change our reality by changing our thoughts and our actions as well. But We're all creators.
Precisely.
And so there is no God lording it over us, and any God that would lord it over us, it wouldn't be a legitimate God anyway.
Precisely, yep.
So, in fact, there's that. Did you know that there was a new series out called American Gods?
I did, actually. I actually watched the whole series. I thought it was quite symbolic.
Oh, yes. I've only seen the first season, and it mm-hmm. I think it's one of the most original works that I've seen in a long time. And funny and just surreal. And especially the first season, there were so many things that happened in that season that you and I would remember. And mm-hmm. it's really, you have to think. You have to have your thinking cap on when you watch this show, because it may just seem like a comedy of errors at some point, but it's not. Everything has a significance and meaning. And I love the last scene in the first season when one of the gods, the blonde goddess, take spring away. And anyway, people won't understand what the ones that have seen it will understand, but she gets her ire up, and they really do some fascinating things to the new gods, and they're just left flabbergasted. And there's an interesting
right.
scene with the cabbie that I think you and I probably would appreciate most. The cabbie and the djinn.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an interesting one.
Yes.
But it is a fascinating piece, and the book is 700 pages long. I don't think I'll ever read it. But I watched the...
Oh, it was a book, okay.
Yeah. And the man who wrote the book, he
that.
Chose the producers and the people who were going to write the screenplay and the people who were going to bring it into reality. And they were all allowed, you know, total creativity, and they came up with something that was really very close enough to the book to not disappoint the readers, and yet so original and so creative that it just stands out above and beyond the rest. It's just an amazing piece of work. I can't wait to see the next season.
Yes, definitely. One thing I'll comment on that to kind of put it into context for folks who may want to look at this is that this is a concept I was first introduced to by a man named Dr. Jordan Peterson, who's a professor in a Canadian university. I forget the university, but in any case, he's doing a series on the Bible on his YouTube channel, which is absolutely fascinating. And what he discusses is that, first of all, a lot of these stories and myths that come passed down through time, especially relating to gods and goddesses and mystical creatures, they're really archetypal stories and what you could call a meta story of human nature itself. So if you can imagine, you know, you take 100 people and you ask them to describe an aspect of I know, the ideal man or woman, let's say, like, what would be a good husband? And they'll all produce their version of what they think a good husband is. And then if you took that story and you boiled it down and you embodied that, or you took all those stories and you boiled them down and you embodied that into a single story, well, now you have a myth.
Mm-hmm.
And what is really beautifully expressed in that American God series is the idea that ideas themselves have a life of their own and they influence people. So, you know, that's kind of what they're playing with in allegory and drama in the series. And it's fascinating because these old ideas of spring, like you can imagine this as being a primitive person where you have no concept of what the seasons are, not from a scientific perspective. So you have no basis for rational necessarily understanding of what seasons are, but they take on a kind of personified form. And then idea of the personification of a phenomenon in reality passes its way down through history in type of in mythos and archetypes. So it's really a beautiful exploration of consciousness and how we relate to our experience and how we kind of understand our reality in terms of dramas and archetypes and things like this. I think it was beautifully done.
Absolutely. It's just it's probably just about flawless, because they must have gone over it many times to tighten it up, because it just there's not even a moment when you're not captivated by what's happening and the dialogues and, you know, the activities that occur that are so unusual that they are outside of the norm of just about anybody. And
right.
That kind of is a consciousness-producing event, too. When we see something that is, we don't understand, we understand what it is. We think we have an idea what it is, but it's not anything that we've ever seen or ever will see. And so the mind doesn't know what to do with it. So that for a moment, we're in a higher state, because we're outside of the normal state of consciousness that analyzes everything. It kind of jerks us out of our normal state. And I like that a lot. And Joseph Campbell did a lot about mythology, and he mentioned that many of the myths that we have over the ages are just repeats of ancient myths of other peoples that lived before, and just kind of they change a word or two, and it's the same myth. And it makes you wonder where they come from.
Right, exactly. And one thing that I feel like Joseph Campbell speaks to so well in his book, Hero with a Thousand Faces,
mm-hmm.
is that these myths are they're over-dramatizations of the human experience itself. So, I mean, if you're a literalist, if you're looking at things from a literal perspective, because you're, like, to kind of echo back to what we were talking about earlier, we're living in an age right now, especially in information, where it's a lot of people are tempted to take things so literally. But myths are not meant to be taken literally. They're meant to be taken allegorically, because they're symbolic representations of the human experience. I mean, the hero's journey is one which the hero initially has his life, and things are all happy, and, you know, whatever the situation may look like, everything's all content, and he doesn't have to worry about a whole lot. And then some event happens which completely destroys his sense of equanimity and peace, and now he has to face not only his himself, because he has to face the truth of whatever this experience is, but then he has to dive into that experience and go through some adventure of facing himself and actualizing aspects of his personality that come to the surface. I mean, one I think beautiful expression of that story in the modern day cultural vernacular, so to speak, is the Superman story, because in the Superman story, there is the boy who comes to Earth. He has all of this potential, but he doesn't necessarily know what his potential is until he starts having to be facing these challenges. And then through facing these challenges, he realizes that he has these powers, but also he has to realize that with great power comes great responsibility. And that also manifests a deeply moral and altruistic nature. So the Superman mythos, if you will, it describes the sovereign concept, which is that a man or a woman who spends time to know about their true beingness and their power, once they really have that understanding, then they fully manifest themselves and they know thyself. Now they dedicate themselves to the great work of making sure everybody else on the planet or the universe has what they need to learn and grow and basically become a caretaker and a custodian of life itself.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's beautifully described in there.
Oh, yeah, that's a really great analogy. And sometimes I have a tendency to see everything in life as a metaphor, because at this level, in a sense, there is no Lance. You know, I don't exist. There was a movie that was made with Jeff Bridges, and it was called A Wrinkle in Time, I think. And it was about these people that come from the future to sightsee the events like massive asteroids hitting the Earth and you know, basically disaster groupies.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
kind of interesting because they say they're coming back to this time when the Jeff Bridges would is long since dead and buried. And if you think about time and the material world, well, in a sense, we are all already dust. You know, somehow and somewhere we become dust, and yet there is that part of us that is eternal and infinite. So it's interesting to see them come back, and then Jeff says, well, he thinks that those bygoners stirred up their perfect world enough to make them double think what they're going to do about visiting disasters in the future. So it's a really interesting movie, and it's a fun watch as well.
Right, yeah. It, being a kind of, I guess you could say, a voyeur on chaos, it almost seems a dark, kind of a morbid pastime. But
mm-hmm. Yeah,
one thing that that's so beautifully rendered in a lot of these esoteric works is the balance between chaos and order. And I know that the powers that be, they kind of like to brandish that they're bringing order from chaos. And a lot of people may hear those words and may have heard a little bit, but the powers that be didn't invent these ideas. They just stole
them. Right.
And friends. Right. And there's a much deeper principle at work here, which kind of gets back to what we were talking about in the beginning, which is that if you get too content, if you get too lackadaisical in your own understanding of reality, then you're like missing out. It's kind of like, you know, reality could be likened to like an iceberg, where the part that you can see is only the tip, and there's all this stuff below the surface that's just waiting to be explored. And
mm-hmm. Well, speaking of icebergs, I can now segue into the next question that I wanted to ask you. You have printed quite a few articles about Antarctica, and I was wondering if you had a feeling for what's actually there and what's happening there. There have been VIPs go to Antarctica and rush home with heart attacks and various other things. So familiar with what is going on there, at least as far as we can know?
Somewhat familiar, yeah. There's two people I follow, and I work somewhat closely with one of them, Corey Good. He's claims to be a secret space program whistleblower and contactee, and David Wilcock. And both of them, through their connections, have suggested that one of the reasons why these elites and these politicians are going down to Antarctica is because there's a treasure trove of ancient artifacts down there. There's allegedly three ancient extraterrestrial spacecraft, massive, like enormous, miles wide extraterrestrial spacecraft that have crash landed down there. And then allegedly there's several ancient civilizations, and then also contemporary civilizations. So apparently the Nazis went down there and settled, after kind of giving up on World War II in a strategic fashion and things like that. So my feeling on all this is that, first of all, that seems like a very plausible explanation, although I can't confirm it completely, of course.
Mm.
And the other thing that seems to be indicative is that it would only make sense that there's a lot of things down there to explore because of all the people that keep going down there. So my question is A, what is down there? And B, is it something that they're going to try to use to steer society in a way towards their benefit? And this is actually a concept that both of the Corey and David have mentioned, and I think is fairly accurate if you're taking stock of all the disclosure that's happening right now. Is there definitely seems to be a push for releasing this information. I mean, recently, the whole Pentagon scandal with UFOs, there was a Pentagon investigation into UFOs that There was a few people that went on mainstream news on Tucker Carlson, who apparently is one of the most watched talking heads these days. And they're taking these things very seriously. I mean, this is, it's not like back in the 90s where, you know, or even the early 2000s where any mention of UFOs was just completely ridiculed.
Right.
I mean, Tucker Carlson the other night when he had this airline pilot on, he was saying, this is something serious. I think there's definitely something happening here. There's definitely some kind of UFO or extraterrestrial phenomenon at work on our planet, and the government knows about it, and we need to talk about it.
And, absolutely.
I mean, if you think about it, that is unprecedented. So,
and that's on mainstream media.
Precisely. Yep, Fox News.
Good, good. Well, it's about time. I mean, it's been happening for 50, 60 years or longer. And so, you know, secrets can only be kept for so long. And then they, you know, it's time to let those things out of the bag, because we're the last ones to get to know. And, of course, the things that have been developed under the radar by corporations and the Nazis doing their own experimentation, the breakaway civilization that's probably comparable to Star Trek, these things are all real. And we don't see them in daily life. We don't see free energy. But, you know, I talked to Gordon Duff one day, and I said, when are we going to see free energy? And he said, never. They're never going to let it out. And he said, they have it. And he told me a couple little things about it that were interesting. And but he said, they'll never let it loose. And so I suspect that people will find independent ways to come up with new techniques to develop free energy. And maybe the kids will, you know, the new kids that are just geniuses and brilliant. So something will happen. And I have a feeling that all of those secrets are going to backfire.
Certainly. Well, I mean, I think this is what makes these times so interesting. And you know, it seems as though, from some perspective, that there's just this total and absolute control. And this is kind of the more darker variant of the interpretation of the awakening movement, to the truther movement, is that, you know, the cabal has complete and utter control over reality, and there's absolutely nothing we can do to break out of it. And I don't actually agree with that viewpoint. I think that that is part of the psyop, is to get us to believe that they have a lot more control than they really do.
Yes.
So yeah.
I agree with you totally. And, you know, there's an enormous amount of mind control going on all over the place. The moon is one source. Mars might be another. Allegedly, there was a gift given to the people at the Pentagon by some aliens. I don't remember which ones, but it had to do with mind control. And they gave one to the Pentagon and one to another group. It might have been Russia, I'm not sure. But even the Vatican uses mind control with priests that go into the underground caverns, and they chant 24 hours a day to influence people to, you know, do certain things and to align with the church. So, you know, there's a lot of mind control going on, and we don't often understand why we're thinking certain things, but sometimes they come from places that we don't or hear. And then they have voice-to-skull technology, all kinds of crazy things.
Right.
So,
this
you
is
know,
why, getting back to discernment, I mean, it's really important that you learn how to discern, because if you don't, then especially when it comes to thought control, you start confusing these thoughts and impulses and emotions as if they're yours, and in reality they're not. They may not necessarily be yours.
That's
because you're having a thought doesn't mean it's yours, you know.
Right.
Really important to be able to differentiate that. And you know, one thing that I think the Law of One beautifully describes is that the ability to entertain ideas. I mean, as long as you're not hurting anybody, there's nothing wrong with exploring an idea. And I would actually argue that
the best way to develop a moral comprehension of the right and wrong is to explore ideas. Sit there and imagine to yourself, what would it be like if I tried to unleash my rage and vengeance on somebody? You know, go through that thought exercise in the safety of your own imagination. And, you know, I would say most people would, in going through that exercise, realize that they probably don't want to rage against somebody or hurt somebody in a vengeful way after they've gone through that, that allowed themselves to explore that. So having the ability to have freedom of thought is really important. And then also learning how to discern, you know, what is true, what is not true, and going through all that is critically important. So.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I think we have an automatic way of doing that, the truthometer inside. It's that gut feeling, and it tells us, yes, that's true, and no, that's not true. And it almost always works when we're not, when we don't interfere with it and when we listen. Well, you know, it looks like we're almost out of time. I was going to ask you if you had any other stories that you wanted to talk about, but it looks like we are going to have to wrap it up, and you're going to have to, you know, say if you have anything that you want to share that is up for you, or, you know, tell people how to get to your blog and so on and so forth, this would be a good time to do it.
Certainly. Well, a couple things that I'll just mention briefly is I definitely appreciate and thank you for allowing me to come on your show. And there's some big things coming for Stillness in the Storm. I've been working very hard over the past 6 months or so to develop some projects I've had in the back of my mind for years now, and I'm finally in a place where I can do that. So I don't want to mention too much, but right. I will say that Stillness in the Storm is going to experience some profound upgrades and changes that won't deter from the experience that it offers now, but enhance it and enrich it. And I hope to offer some tools to help people better communicate with each other, build community, and work together to be the change for themselves and others. So I really look forward to what 2018 has to offer. And I'll also be speaking at the Portal to Ascension conference next October. And I'll also be doing a live stream this June as well through Portal to Ascension. So keep your eyes out for that, everybody. And thanks so much.
Wonderful. Well, thanks, Justin. And I know that whatever you're coming up with is going to be incredible. So thanks again for coming back. And I look forward to talking to you again in the new year. And Happy New Year, everybody.